George Craig is not buried in Grinnell, but his presence here is an essential part of our story, so we share it today. He was born about 1840 on a plantation in Kentucky, and when he was around 5 years old, he was taken to Missouri with several other family members, from what we can tell. As he grew into his teens, his size and strength made him a more valuable asset to his owner. And when he was about 18, they tried to sell him down south. Now, young George realized that a southern owner would mean a harder life, and that the further south he was, the harder escaping would be. So he drank swamp water and rubbed tobacco juice in his eyes to make himself unsellable. He was always looking to escape. His chance finally came one day when he was handcuffed to another slave on a riverboat. He slipped out of the cuffs, jumped into the river, and got away, making his way to Leavenworth, Kansas. Now, we have two accounts of George Craig's journey to freedom. Both are from interviews that he gave later in his life after he had moved to Grinnell. The first is from 1895. He had returned to Leavenworth, where he had started his journey to freedom 36 years earlier, and where his mother was then living. He was interviewed by the Leavenworth Times and told them how he had been helped by abolitionists who hid him there for close to a year. Then he said that around April 1859, he made his way into Iowa and with, I quote, some 20-odd others started east in charge of John Brown, end quote. He also says he was dropped off near Grinnell. That article from the Leavenworth Times was reprinted in the Grinnell paper. Now, the 1859 journey of abolitionist John Brown through Iowa has been studied quite extensively, and it is widely thought that there were 12 freedom seekers with the group of Brown and his men, so the account of traveling with 20-odd others is consistent. The group is known to have stopped in Grinnell on February 20, 1859, and according to that record, they were fortunate to have mild weather during their journey, so this could account for George Craig remembering the month as April. The group stayed in Grinnell for two nights. The black men stayed in the barn of town founder J.B. Grinnell, and the women were put up in one of the hotels. Now, John Brown was a well-known entity, and at this point had a price on his head from a raid to free slaves in Missouri a few months earlier. There were some who did not support him in Grinnell, but most did, and the group was generally well received. Brown even gave a couple of public speeches that were well attended. When the group left here, they were sent with provisions of food and clothing for their journey. Now, the names of the 12 black people who traveled with John Brown are not recorded anywhere. And as far as we know, this George Craig account is the only one where a freedom seeker identifies as having been on this journey. The second account, given by Mr. Craig, was published in 1922 in the Grinnell Herald. I'll save you from doing the math. This was 27 years after the first article and more than 60 years after the actual journey. He was 82 years old. He said he escaped via the Underground Railroad and came through Grinnell. He reported the year as 1860 and did not mention John Brown, so there were some slight differences, perhaps understandable given the span of years. The first public record we have of George Craig is from 1864, when he married Eliza Jane Gilball of Springdale, Iowa. Now, Springdale was a large community of Quakers, and I think it's worth noting that they had hosted the John Brown party in 1859 for nearly 2 weeks. George and Eliza's first child, Theodora, or Dora to her family and friends, was born a year later. A second daughter, Anna, was born in 1868, by which time they had moved to Oskaloosa. George was working as a barber, and he even got involved a bit in politics. In 1875, they welcomed their third child, Eva Pearl. School was always important to the family, and they wanted their children to get as much education as possible. Eva Pearl, their youngest, especially loved school, and pursuit of education would become a family legacy. The Craigs moved to Grinnell in 1887, when Eva Pearl was 12. Dora and Anna had both married and were living here. Now, Dora married a man named John Brown Lucas, whose family had a big farm near Ewart, just south of town. That farm had been purchased by his father, a man named Henry Lucas, in 1859. It was the first farm owned by a black family in Poweshiek County. Henry Lucas is another notable story, and he had quite a remarkable life. It included purchasing his freedom and that of his wife and children after finding gold in California. In fact, it was his gold mining partner, a man from Montezuma, who encouraged him to settle here. By the 1870s, the Lucas family owned over 320 acres. 160 acres of that land is still owned by his great-great-grandson. So when the Craig's daughter, Dora, married John Brown Lucas, these two impressive families were linked through marriage. The Craig's middle daughter, Anna, married a Grinnell man named Edward Good, who was a barber. Notably, she opened the first beauty shop in town, and she ran that business for over 25 years. Her husband died when their son was just a baby, so Anna raised him mostly as a single parent. And later in life, she married a man named Solomon Brown, who was a cook at the college for many years. You'll note that on her tombstone, her name is listed as Anna Craig Brown, and that Craig is misspelled. Now, John and Dora lived on the farm for a while, but they soon decided to move to town, and in 1895, they added triplets to their growing family. We believe that these were the first triplets born in the state of Iowa, at least the first recorded triplet birth. You can imagine that Grandma Eliza and Aunt Eva Pearl would often help Dora care for the babies. Now, by many accounts, Grinnell was a good place to live, but it wasn't a perfect place. Many people were kind and supportive, but there were always some who were not. There were businesses who would not serve them, and there were people and parts of town that they knew to avoid. And this leads us into some of the more complicated parts of George Craig's story. There are many tidbits scattered among the pages of the early Grinnell papers, and how you interpret them will be influenced by the assumptions you carry with you into this story. So I invite you to pause a moment and consider what you believe of this man based on what you've heard thus far. Consider the experiences of his childhood, of his early years of marriage, and consider the times in which he lived. Now, I mentioned earlier that in 1895, an interview was published in the Grinnell paper. This was the same year that the triplets were born, an event that also got a lot of attention. Remember, Anna had the only beauty shop in town, and George was a barber, serving mostly white clientele. So they were known to many. There were only a few black families in town, and the Craigs were now even more visible than before. 1 year after this, in 1896, George Craig was arrested for bootlegging and put in jail for 3 months. And then a couple of years after that, in 1900, he ran for state office. There is a notice in the Grinnell Herald saying that Craig, quote, failed to secure a position in the legislature, but wanted to thank the citizens of Grinnell for their support. Now, isn't it interesting that he would decide to run for office at this time? What does that tell us about him and about his life in Grinnell? Over the next 20 years, he was arrested several more times for gambling and alcohol-related crimes. Now, we know that many men were charged with such things. But is it possible Mr. Craig may have been arrested more than others because of the color of his skin? A few cases got more coverage than others, and they may offer some insight. In one, a man swore on the stand that Craig had sold him liquor at least 3 times. But the jury found George Craig not guilty. So while there is evidence of multiple charges, we do not yet know how many times he was convicted. In 1915, George Craig retired from barbering. He was 75 years old and probably looking forward to some restful years. Sadly, he wasn't so lucky. In November of that same year, the paper reported a puzzling incident. Mr. Craig swore a declaration against a man for larceny of 10 window shades from the Craig home. 10 window shades. When the case came up for hearing, it was found that 8 of the shades were back in place, so the case was dismissed. Now, what are we to make of this? Why would someone steal his window shades? Could he have made it up? But if so, why window shades? Was it a prank at the expense of an old man? Perhaps one prank too many and he decided to press charges? We'll never know the answer. And then, 2 years later, in 1917, he was arrested for carrying a concealed weapon. And a month later, his wife signed papers declaring him of unsound mind, and the court appointed a guardian to handle their finances. Could he have had dementia? Possibly. But 2 years later, the court determined that he had recovered his mind. So maybe not dementia? And it was after all of this that in 1922, the Grinnell Herald interviewed him for the second article about his life. He was 82. I wonder what prompted the paper to run that story. His granddaughter, Edith Renfro Smith, was 10 when he died 2 years later. She remembers that both of her grandparents were in poor health and that her mother and aunts cared for them. It was a strain on the families, and with limited options, George Craig was sent to the state asylum in Mount Pleasant. 17 days later, he was dead. The family didn't have money to bring his body back to Grinnell, so he was buried in an unmarked grave in the hospital cemetery. His wife, Eliza, died less than 2 months later. While George Craig isn't buried here, we believe that his spirit is here with her and the rest of their family. The life of George Craig is intertwined with Grinnell in complicated ways, and it may not be as straightforward as some people would like to think. Celebrating Grinnell as a stop on the Underground Railroad doesn't mean that it was an easy place for black persons to live. But we honor their memories and their contributions, and we are certainly a better place for their presence here and for knowing their stories.